49 states have already done it, so instituting concealed carry gun laws shouldn't be impossible for Illinois. But doing so raises questions. What do you need to know to qualify for a concealed carry permit? If you're a business owner or a church pastor, do you want to allow concealed weapons in your facility? And if you're in law enforcement, does the increase in legally armed people affect how you decide who's dangerous and who isn't? I'm Jim Meadows. Today on Focus, we'll answer questions about concealed carry with Champaign County Sheriff Dan Walsh, concealed carry firearms instructor John Bach, and security consultant Tim Sutton. Our program continues after the news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. You may welcome Illinois' concealed carry law, or you may be dreading it, but this is the year the law goes into effect, making Illinois the 50th and final U.S. state to allow the carrying of concealed firearms in public. Applications have been coming in the law enforcement agencies, people have been taking concealed carry training courses, and the first concealed carry permits are expected to go out fairly soon, I understand. Today on Focus, we're going to take a closer look at concealed carry in Illinois. Later this hour, we'll talk with security consultant Timothy Sutton, who works with hospitals. First, we'll turn to a local sheriff and a concealed carry firearms instructor to hear what they can tell us about the process. And we want to hear from you. Have you applied for a concealed carry permit? Would you share the reason why you want one? Do you feel allowing concealed carry will make Illinois safer or not? Give us a call this hour on Focus. The phone number, toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. You can email your questions to will-talk@illinois.edu, and you can reach us on Twitter or Facebook at Focus580. With me now in the studio is John Bach. He is an authorized concealed carry firearms instructor. If you want a concealed carry permit, you must pass a course taught by him or someone else with the same qualifications. John Bach is also president of Gun Safe Life, formerly the Champaign County Rifle Association. John, welcome to Focus.
Good morning, Jim. Thank you.
And on the phone with me is Champaign County Sheriff Dan Walsh to talk about how law enforcement practices are affected by concealed carry and about the voice he has as a sheriff in deciding who gets a concealed carry permit. Sheriff Walsh, welcome to Focus.
Well, thank you very much. Good morning to you, and good morning, John.
And, Sheriff, let's get down to the very basics of concealed carry. What do we mean by concealed? What qualifies as concealed?
Well, the law actually states concealed or partially concealed, and we are viewing it if somebody makes a genuine effort to keep the gun in a non-open position, covered by a jacket, a sweatshirt, perhaps your pants if it's on your ankle or in a pocket. To us, that is concealed. It is possible, for example, if you have it on your belt and you're wearing, let's say, a suit coat, that your suit coat could come open or somebody could partially see it. We view that as that meets the law. It is partially concealed, and that's what the law asks for.
Is open carrying of weapons right now in Illinois illegal or legal?
It is illegal. It is not legal to open carry in Illinois.
Okay. Sheriff, can you say anything about you've been seeing, I think, applications come in through your office. Can you say anything in terms of how many you get or who they come from?
Yes, I can tell you. I can't tell you who they come from. I can tell you about how many. The applications go into the state police. And then each county, each law enforcement agency, actually it could be a municipal agency too, can opt in to actually view the applications from their area and do their own background checks, and if they want to object to the process. In Champaign County, the last numbers that I heard were there were about 400 applications. We have reviewed about 20 of them and had no objections. Maybe we reviewed about 40 of almost 10%, and we have had no objections to any of those.
If you were to object, what sort of grounds do you think you would have objections to someone who might otherwise be allowed a permit?
Well, the law talks about somebody who poses a danger to themselves or somebody else. certainly things like if we just responded to a domestic battery situation that perhaps didn't make it into the state computers yet, or unfortunately it seems every day that one of our local agencies here is responding to a suicidal subject. Things like that is where I envision that we may be making objections. The state police are supposed to be checking for criminal history and things that would normally appear of record after a certain amount of time, so I don't anticipate we'll be coming across too many of those that they haven't already flagged.
John Bach, who are you seeing in the training courses? Who's coming in to take those? What sort of range of folks?
Primarily men are coming in, although we're seeing a few women, maybe 20-25% women. A wide range of people, everything from college-age individuals up to people who probably served in the Spanish-American War. A wide range of people, wide range of skill sets, ranging from just bought their gun and they want to carry a license to they've been shooting for a whole lot of years. It runs the gamut from everything you can think of, including people with some significant disabilities.
What sort of disabilities are you talking about here?
Physical disabilities, visual disabilities, deaf people, a wide range of people, everything you can think of. Disabilities in terms of amputations, you name it. We're seeing, it's just a cross-section of the community. We're seeing a lot of people who aren't in the best of health that want to carry permits, so we're having to kind of tweak our classes a little bit in terms of our medical preparedness for medical incidents that may occur. We've had two people that we thought might be having a heart attack just in the last fall. So we're, seeing a lot of people that we're not accustomed to seeing typically taking these kinds of classes.
Give me an idea of how if you can walk me through a session, one of the sessions of one of the classes of what the students are learning and doing.
Well, the first things, of course, we start with firearm safety. We talk about gear selection, gun selection, ammunition selection. We go on to talk about how the guns function and all that good stuff. Then we do some dry fire practice, practice their draw strokes, drawing from a concealment holster, how to pull the trigger properly so they shoot accurately. We talk legal considerations. We talk post-shooting considerations, interaction with law enforcement, interaction with potential bad guys, and all kinds of stuff, you name it. We talk about the psychological aspects of being prepared to carry a license. We talk, obviously, the legal parameters of when it's justified to use deadly force. We talk about the care and feeding, proper care and feeding of your firearm. You name it, we cover a wide range of stuff in the course of the 16-hour class for the people who aren't former military or haven't had previous training.
For people who already have some previous training, what do you work with them?
Basically, we do a review of basic safety. We talk about gear selection, gun selection, all that kind of stuff with them as well. We take them out. We do the same dry fire exercises we do with our 16-hour class. And then we go out and we do some shooting. We shoot from some different positions. We shoot strong-handed, weak-handed shooting. We shoot oftentimes from drawing from the holster and shooting from kind of the hip, as some people will affectionately call it. We talk about communicating with bad guys, stop, get back, to basically encourage bad guys to go away as opposed to needing to shoot them. We talk about moving off the X. Don't stand still and draw your gun, but be moving. Moving target's a more difficult target to hit for the bad guys. So we talk all kinds of tactics and strategies to prevail. First of all, to avoid a gunfight, but if a gunfight does break out, we talk about strategies to prevail in that fight.
And I'm wondering now, some of this sounds like it might come up in a basic gun safety course or a course in learning how to use a weapon properly and a refresher course for that. What sort of things do you think are there and specifically for the concealed carry law?
Well, there's a lot of it. All the tactics, of course, are for the concealed carry law, the legal discussions. There's 4 hours of legal in either class, talking about when deadly force is justified, talking about the new Illinois law, talking defense of the dwelling, defense of person, public property types of things. The prohibited locations, we talk about those. I mean, there's a lot that goes into even the 8-hour class for people who've had previous training, in addition to the gun handling skills that we teach and we pride ourselves on doing a good job with the students.
And the students themselves, when you talk to them, what sort of concerns are interest in having the permit do they bring to you?
Their biggest thing is wanting to know the law so that they don't get themselves in trouble and make a mistake when they're out in public. I mean, anybody can pull a trigger, but a smart, prudent, thinking man knows the law, knows when it's permissible to bring the gun into play and how to handle themselves in a situation so that they're not being willy-nilly about drawing the gun inappropriately when they shouldn't be. And that's one of the upsides of the new Illinois law is that there's a lot of legal lecturing that's supposed to go into these classes that will teach people how to carry a gun legally and the judicious use of deadly force so that they're not getting themselves or other people in trouble.
This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows, and we're talking about Illinois' new concealed carry law. My guests are concealed carry firearms instructor John Bach and Champaign County Sheriff Dan Walsh. Your questions and comments on concealed carry are welcome. The phone number is 1-800-222-9455, 1-800-222-WILL. Our email address is will-talk@illinois.edu, and we're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. Sheriff Walsh, I was wondering, Wikipedia is not the final word in everything, but they list Illinois as being among the shall-issue states for concealed carry as compared to may-issue states, which I gather means that it's pretty much guaranteed if there's not some sort of factor in the law that would forbid them, that a person who applies and passes the training will get the permit. What sort of weight does your voice carry if you were to file an objection?
Well, we don't know that for sure yet. The way it works, if we were to file an objection because we feel the individual poses a threat to himself or the public, then the state police, we document that, we send it to the state police, and they send it to a review board, and so far there, of course, have been no hearings because all this is brand new, so we don't really know what kind of guidelines the review board is going to use.
Okay, and I understand that, just the question, how is this going to change things for you in terms of you and how your deputies react to, say, pulling someone over before, I gathered, if someone had a gun on them, you could make one assumption about them. But now the person with the gun may be a bad guy, or the person with the gun just may be someone who's totally within his rights to have a gun.
That is exactly right. I mean, where we were, let's say last year, if we stopped somebody with a gun, we knew they were either a fellow police officer or they were a bad guy. And police officers quickly identify themselves to other police officers, so that never really is an issue. Now with the new law, when we encounter somebody who has a weapon, there will be a question. Does he or she possess it legally? The good news, I think, is that most folks who go to the effort of getting a concealed carry license and go through all the training, like what John was talking about, they're good citizens. And I assume if we ask, that they will immediately tell us, yes, I have a concealed carry and I've got a license. Or they may very well volunteer it to us when we have contact with them.
Have you been looking at what's happening in other states? 49 other states, of course, are already doing some form of concealed carry. And what do you think of how things have been working out there?
I think it works pretty good. I mean, there are some states where it's been in existence so long, it's really not an issue for law enforcement. It's just something people have gotten used to. I think that same thing will happen here. There'll be a little bit of an adjustment period for the citizens and for law enforcement. And after a while, everybody will be used to it, and it'll be no big deal.
The sheriff of Cook County, Tom Dart, told the Chicago Tribune that the concealed carry law, as written in his opinion, made the job of policing more difficult than necessary, and that he actually expected more shootings to occur. What do you think of that opinion?
Well, we deal with a different clientele down in central Illinois than Sheriff Dart has to deal with up in Cook County. I don't really think it's going to increase our workload hugely. Obviously, we are going to be checking the applicants, so that's going to take some time. But that's not a huge imposition. We can deal with that. In terms of what happens on the street, yeah, there may be an occasion where a concealed carry person is forced into a situation where he has to use the gun, and with the training that John and others have given, hopefully they'll do it in the right circumstances, and everything will maybe perhaps work out for the better, as opposed to if they didn't have that weapon.
Let's take a phone call. This is line one. Scott from Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yeah, thanks for the program, guys. I'm a potential applicant, I guess I might say. But thought of carrying a loaded gun just scares the death out of me. So I appreciate you accenting that in the context of training and, you know, the use of the weapon on the body and stuff like that. But I guess my real question is whether this has changed any of the rules concerning transport. Let's say if I don't have a carry permit, how I have to have the gun and the ammunition in separate areas of my, you know, person and our car. Have any of those rules changed?
If I might, and John, supplement me if you think I missed something. Those rules are still basically the same, both the statutory rules and the court case interpretation of it. If you don't have a concealed carry permit, you can still carry a weapon in a vehicle broken down and in a case that's perfectly legal. So all the same rules still apply. It's just now if you have a concealed carry, then you can carry it loaded in your vehicle or on your person in your vehicle.
Okay, that means if you have a permit, you can carry it loaded in your vehicle.
Correct.
Okay, and that could be anywhere in the vehicle. It doesn't have to be the trunk or anything like that.
Correct.
Okay. Scott, does that answer the question?
Much.
Okay, Scott, thank you very much for calling. And let me go right to another caller, and that's Sarah from Villa Grove on line 4. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Good morning. I have to admit I have mixed feelings about the idea of people carrying loaded weapons, although I'm sure that, as you've been calling them, the bad guys have had them all along. But I'm wondering, how do you go about ensuring that people with psychiatric histories that have not involved the police but might identify, you know, or is there some way for you to cross-reference with medical sources so that you're not giving a weapon to someone who is psychotic? And I'm just going to hang up and let you talk about it.
Sarah, thank you very much for your call.
As the sheriff's office, we do not have the ability to access individuals' psychiatric records. So the only way we can object is if, as I said, let's say we dealt with them where yesterday they were suicidal and we took them over to one of the hospitals and they were involuntarily committed. Now, there are procedures under those circumstances where they are to report that and the state police may pick it up. But if I, let's just say that I have significant psychological problems and I'm simply seeing a psychiatrist or a counselor, perhaps a PhD, not an MD, I don't believe there's any way for the state police to access those records either, so that is a concern.
John?
The state of Illinois has got some new rules and regulations about reporting from qualified examiners in emergency rooms and hospitals and nursing homes, even school administrators, to report people who are a danger to themselves or the community at large. So there is a reporting mechanism where those qualified examiners will actually report to the state of Illinois Department of Human Services information to lead to the suspension or revocation of the FOID cards of individuals that these qualified examiners feel that are a danger to themselves or the community at large. So there are some changes happening to tighten up the handling of some of these individuals who have mental health issues, and I think that's a good thing overall as long as it's not abused.
And, you know, as a gun safety instructor, not just with concealed carry but with other sorts of gun instruction as well, would you be one of the people who are reporting if for some reason you had reason to believe that that one of the people enrolled was having problems?
We would not report a mental health issue in a class. However, we're required by law not to sign off on anybody who's exhibited attitudes or safety concerns in terms of unsafe gun handling or improper attitudes about you know, what they're going to do with the concealed carry license once they get it. And if we think that somebody's shouldn't be carrying a gun around, we will not sign off and give them a certificate of completion.
Okay. Let's take another call. Line 1, Scott from Lovington. And good morning. You're on Focus.
Hi. For example, my bank put a you know, no gun sign up in their lobby. I just wondered, you know, church, bank, whoever puts those signs up, do they have any backup in law?
They do. The statute does allow private individuals, private businesses, or public corporations even, to say no guns. There is a specific sign. It's 4x6. The state police put it out, and it's basically a picture of a pistol with a red line through it. And if a concealed carry permit holder were to knowingly carry in an area that is prohibited, they could actually be charged with a crime.
And that was something we were wondering about here. Actually, we're broadcasting from Campbell Hall on the U of I campus. We have one of those signs on our doors. But does the sign has to be a certain size and design, I understand.
It does. Now, if you read the statute, it's a very, very complex statute. There are 23 categories of areas where you cannot have it, and I believe those exist whether or not there is signage. I believe the U of I is going to post all their buildings just to try to keep things simple. So you've got, for example, zoos, hospitals. You don't have, if you're going to go to Brookfield Zoo, I don't think the zoo has to post the signage because it's prohibited by statute, but I suspect they will, just as a courtesy to all their patrons, to just remind folks about the rules.
But if you're a place of business where you could do it or not, and you put up the wrong type of sign, how does that affect you legally if something happens?
If I were to make my own sign and it doesn't conform to what the state police have, I do not think that you could be criminally charged, because the statute specifically says that it is a sign designed by the state police. You can be asked to leave, and then certainly if you refuse to leave, then we have all sorts of other criminal things that come into play, like trespass, that currently exist.
Okay.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
Along those lines, is there any penalty or guidelines along what appropriate somebody drawing their gun inappropriately? Say, you know, they're last in line at the mall or something like that, you know, compared to any actual threat. Is there any guidelines that talk about that? And I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you very much, Scott.
John, you want to take that one? I assume you cover that a little bit in your class.
We do cover that in our class. If you pull a gun inappropriately, you can be charged with anything from, aggravated assault or aggravated unlawful use of weapons to potentially, if you actually shoot somebody, attempted murder, or murder if you end up killing somebody and you're not justified in doing so. So there's a lot of pitfalls that if you don't use force appropriately, if you pull your gun out because you're upset about the car in front of you at McDonald's is taking too long, you're going to be in for a world of hurts. And on top of that, you're not going to have that permit very long. And frankly, you're probably not going to be walking the streets, which is, I think, most law-abiding citizens would view that as a good thing. If somebody's going to be so hot-headed that they pull a gun out because they're unhappy with the level of service at the store, then they shouldn't be carrying a gun in the first place, and they won't be for very long.
John, this is not something we can get in with the same detail you would get into the course, but I was wondering if you can walk us through just some of the basic guidelines and when, in which a citizen is in their rights to use a weapon in self-defense. What situation has to exist for that to be the case?
Basically, it has to be a situation where it's a death or great bodily injury, and the immediate affliction of said death or great bodily injury by a bad person. There's a long legal definition, if you will, and our lawyers do most of the teaching of legal in our particular classes. So you caught me a little bit flat-footed here, but the bottom line is you have to be able to articulate that you're in fear of death or great bodily injury and the immediate infliction thereof, knowing what you knew at the time of the attack. So you can't just say, you know, I was in fear for my life because that guy over there gave me a dirty look. You have to specifically articulate that guy over there was much bigger than you, much healthier than you, and that he had the ability, the opportunity, and that you were in jeopardy of death or great bodily injury at the hands of a potential assailant.
I'm thinking of you know, we go into hypothetical situations, it can be a little dangerous as whether they actually exist. A couple of people break into your house. One of them detains you simply by being stronger than you. You still have your gun, technically. Can you use it?
Absolutely. If somebody breaks into your house, they're pretty much bought and paid for when it comes to the law. And they're not there to deliver Christmas cookies. And pretty much on your own property, you're not required to retreat. And if the bad guy's in your house inappropriately and you reasonably believe that he's there to cause you or one of your family members death or great bodily injury.
But if he's just there to take your stuff.
If he's just there to take your stuff, you can, depending on where you're at, this isn't Texas, but this is Illinois. But at the same time, we counsel students in our classes, you know, an intruder in your house is pretty much bought and paid for in the eyes of the law. But if he's just taking your TV, let him take it. Hold the door for him. There's a better TV out there, and it's going to cost more than your homeowner's deductible to replace that television set just to clean up the mess if you shoot somebody. And then there's the whole aftermath of shooting somebody. There's nothing good comes out of shooting a bad guy except the fact that you live another day in all likelihood. There's all kinds of repercussions. You could lose your job. You could be sued. You could face jail time. You could be arrested. All kinds of pharmacological issues relating to stress, substance abuse issues. You name it. There's a lot of bad things that happen in the aftermath of a shooting. And it's the same way for police officers. Police officers that are involved in a shooting, there's a lot of bad things that happen after a shooting. You know, sometimes police officers retire after a deadly force incident just because they they're so rattled by the incident. So we counsel everybody to use every option in the book to avoid using deadly force. But yes, if somebody's just in your house taking your TV or the china, let them take it, hold the door for them, and just let them know not to come back.
Sheriff Walsh, would you vouch for that advice?
I think John has given some excellent advice there, yes.
Okay.
Jim, could I say one other thing?
Certainly, Sheriff.
If a citizen does have an encounter with a police officer, I do encourage him, if you're a concealed carry person, you have the weapon with you, to tell that officer right up front, hey, I do have a concealed carry permit. I have a weapon with me. It's on my hip. It's in my pocket, whatever it is. Don't reach for it. Let the officer say what he or she would like you to do. But the best thing, we don't want any surprises between good citizens and officers, so it's just best if they ask you or for you to tell. The other thing that I'm going to suggest is that you keep your driver's license, perhaps, and your proof of insurance someplace other than where you keep your weapon. It'll make things a lot easier for everybody involved.
Okay. But it's good to volunteer the information that you're carrying a weapon.
I think so. Yeah, I mean, I'm a police officer. Let's say I got stopped for speeding up Kankakee, and I'm carrying a weapon. The first thing I'm going to do is tell that state trooper, that officer, hey, I'm a police officer and I have a weapon, because I don't want him to see it and all of a sudden, you know, make some wrong assumptions.
We have about 7 minutes in this part of our program when we have calls coming in. So let's say hello on line one to Joe from Champaign. Good morning. You're on Focus.
Yes, thank you very much. I have a quick question concerning the reporting function. There was a mention of certain types of psychologists or hospitals or something being a reporting function for somebody that they felt might be particularly unstable. What if one were to happen to know an individual who is pretty much a drunk, a road rage addict, a gun guy, and his attitude is that he's looking for getting this concealed carry permit because there's going to be some son of a gun that's really going to tee him off, and he's, by golly, going to take care of that. This guy has never done anything wrong. He has got a clean the history of him legally, you have a reason to be concerned that this guy should ever be allowed to have a concealed permit. But you're not a reporting agency. You're just a friend or a former friend.
Wow, and that could happen. I suppose the only thing you can do is report it to your local jurisdiction. And like I said, you know, we are reviewing the applicants. I can't speak for what this review board would do. I suppose if you have a concrete instance where he said, I want to get a gun because I want to kill X, they're going to deny it. But if it's just a general, I think he's a bit off beam. He's only playing with 51 cards in the deck, things like that. I just don't know. It is a constitutional right. My guess, and this is purely a guess, sir, is that unless you can really articulate some specific facts, that the board would go ahead and approve the permit. But again, we haven't had any cases, so that's just a guess at this point.
Well, Joe, thank you very much for the call. And I'm wondering there, I suppose, thinking of some of the tragic shooting incidents that have happened over the years, that if someone is planning on a specific time in which he or she is going to go out and shoot somebody, they're probably not going to let the lack of a concealed carry permit stop them. But if you were worried that if a concealed carry permit just gave this person more opportunities to have a gun with them at times when they might fly off the handle, and then that just perhaps raises the odds that something bad might happen, even if the person wasn't, premeditating on doing something. But it sounds like the law doesn't provide a specific direction there, John.
We've had 49 other states that have had carry permits for a lot of years over these years. Millions of people carry guns, and there's over a million active permits in Florida right now alone. We don't see a lot of those kinds of issues in these other states. I can't imagine Illinois is going to be a whole lot different. If there's somebody that you feel that really, truly shouldn't be having a carry permit, like Sheriff Dan said, go talk to your local law enforcement agency and relay your concerns to them, and hopefully they can use that information down the road in their back pocket, so to speak, if they have an instance with this individual to take the appropriate action.
Let's take another call on line two. This is Ed from Urbana. Good morning. You're on Focus. Yes, Ed.
Yes. My question is this. What are the reasons that people want to carry a gun?
Okay. Well, John, I assume you've been talking to a lot of people in the course of the instruction you're giving. What are the reasons that people tell you?
Well, the chief and primary reason is that it's easier to carry a gun than it is to carry a cop. With a firearm on your person, you can protect yourself and your family from attack, from violent attack or even not so violent attack by bad people intending doing evil things to you. There's also the possibility of good guys with guns out there stopping bad guys committing crimes against other innocent individuals. That is the primary reason, is that people want the choice of whether or not to carry the tool that they can use to defend themselves and their families and other innocent life from death or great bodily injury. That's the primary reason people carry a gun, because, again, a cop like Dan is just too darn heavy to carry around every day with you.
Sheriff, I'm sure that's no aspersion on you.
But
even as we wait for the first concealed carry permits to be mailed out, and that could be, have you gotten any inkling about when that might be happening?
I'm guessing early April.
Early April, okay. Lawmakers in Springfield have been filing bills to modify the process already. Some of them would increase penalties for carrying guns where they're not allowed, or punish instructors who don't do the training properly, lower the legal age for concealed carry. I mean, I think some of these are filed by skeptics of concealed carry, and some are filed by supporters. Sheriff, what do you think? Is it too soon to put some of these modifications across, or are there some changes that ought to be made right now?
Well, in terms of the instructors, I have heard some horror stories about instructors doing just an abysmal job and really just finding a way to collect money and not do anything. So that I would certainly support. Some of these other changes, I think it might be better to let it ride for a few months and let's see how this shakes out. I suspect there will be changes to the law. I'm sure there will be cases come up, criminal cases, that help us all interpret what the law is. As I said, this is, to me, a very complicated act. Just knowing where you can't carry is very difficult to understand, because there are so many places and exceptions to these places.
And, John, before we went on air, you had expressed your own concern about concealed carry instructors who were not giving proper instruction.
Yes, indeed.
And that's happening here in Illinois? There are cases?
Oh, it's happening here in Champaign County. It's happening in Vermilion County. It's happening just about everywhere. And we're trying to get a handle on those. The state police at our prodding have put up a complaint form on their website. So I'm hoping that they follow up on some of those complaints that they get and go after some of these corner-cutting instructors.
Sheriff, we had, I think we had mentioned earlier that some institutions, businesses, churches have some leeway on whether or not to allow people to carry weapons. We talked about the signage that these places have to carry if they decide not to. Has anybody called you and spoken with you to asking for advice on making a decision here, and what have you been telling them?
No one has called me for advice about concealed carry. It's funny that you should mention churches, because last year I got calls from two different churches asking if they could hire off-duty deputies for security during church services. And these were calls from the minister or trustees of the church.
Were these because they feared some repercussions from concealed carry, or that they already had concerns?
It had nothing to do with concealed carry. They had one or more members of their congregation that gave them some concern that they might react very inappropriately, and they wanted an armed security and trained security person there.
What was your advice for them?
We put them in touch with people that do that kind of work.
Well, that is something I had not considered happening in a church, but I guess there are those with those real concerns. John, has anybody had been coming to you with advice or questions along these lines?
Not really. We're primarily dealing with people seeking the training, but you know, as far as the churches go, any place that posts no guns is a unarmed victim zone, a high-risk location in our eyes. And if churches post themselves no guns, they open themselves up to the potential of somebody coming in with a firearm, with evil in their hearts, and the next thing you know, they're completely helpless there until the police arrive. In Colorado a few years ago, there was a armed churchgoer that stopped a young man that was intent on committing a mass killing. She stopped him out in the parking lot before he got into the church, and he committed suicide after she shot him. So, you know, the fact that there are potentially armed good guys in the congregation, in my mind, makes for a safer congregation, a safer church, and a safer church-going experience.
Well, we've been talking about Illinois' concealed carry law on Focus on WYLL. We're going to take a short break, then we'll meet a security consultant who works with businesses and institutions that are looking at their options and responsibilities in light of the new law. I want to thank my guests for the first part of the program. First, Champaign County Sheriff Dan Walsh, thank you very much for being on the program today. Thank you. And concealed carry firearms instructor and the president of Gun Save Life, John Bach, thank you for coming on Focus today.
Thanks for having me, Jim. It's a good time.
We'll be back after the break. This is Focus on WYLL. This is Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. The topic is Illinois' new concealed carry law. And my guests have been Champaign County Sheriff Dan Walsh and concealed carry firearms instructor John Bach. Let's continue now our look at the law with my next guest, Tim Sutton. He has about 20 years, if I have the numbers right, 20 years experience as a private security consultant. He's on staff at the security consulting firm Sorensen Wilder & Associates, based in Bourbonnais up near Kankakee. Tim's specialties include workplace violence prevention and training and physical security program management. Tim, thanks for coming on Focus today.
Thank you for having me.
And I should note again for listeners, if you have a question or a comment on concealed carry and how it affects businesses, churches, and other institutions, call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455 or email us at will-talk@illinois.edu. We're on Twitter and Facebook at Focus580. The phone number again is 1-800-222-WILL. Tim, was I right, 20 years experience or more?
20 years in security, yes. Not necessarily all as a consultant, but certainly that would make me very old.
Okay. Well, has the institution of the concealed carry law here in Illinois changed the sort of things that clients are coming to you with questions about?
Not necessarily. It's not really the leading question for a security vulnerability assessment, but it is something that we definitely need to address when we do one, and it is a component of an assessment that we would do.
Okay. I'm wondering about places like, say, churches and places of business, maybe even workplaces as well. Have people from those places been coming to you asking about concealed carry and how that affects things?
I think it directly coming to me, no, as far as there being talk, yes. In the hospital side especially, various organizations, including the Illinois Hospital Association, have done a good job of staying on top since June of last year or so, anticipating that there's going to be concealed carry in Illinois. Wanting to know how that's going to affect the hospitals and what they should be doing to prepare for that.
Okay. And in the case of hospitals, I understand, first of all, that concealed carry, firearms are simply not allowed in hospitals, period.
That is correct. It is one of the prohibited areas.
And so a hospital can't opt out of that. That's just the law. So if someone is carrying a concealed weapon and they park at the hospital for whatever reason, whether they work there or they're visiting someone there, what do they do with their weapon?
Okay. And it's interesting that you brought that up because that's one of my largest concerns with hospitals. The way the law is written, you are allowed on that prohibited area to have your concealed weapon in your vehicle when you pull onto the property. You are allowed to store that loaded firearm in your vehicle, either in a locked container, out of sight, inside the vehicle, or in a container in a locked vehicle. There's the third option, which is in the trunk. Now, the odd thing about the way the law is written, and to me the dangerous part of the law, is that in order to store the firearm in the trunk, you'd have to carry the concealed weapon in the parking lot where it is prohibited. So they've written a little bit in the law that allows a person to exit the vehicle with a concealed weapon for the purpose of storing that firearm in the trunk, provided the firearm is unloaded. Now, what that means, and where it gets scary, is that someone would have to unload, possibly unholster to start with, then unload the firearm before they exited the vehicle. And then upon coming back to leave, the same type of thing. It would be unloaded when they get in their car. They would then load it, and they would put it in a holster, possibly. Now, misfires occur during loading, unloading, and holstering of a weapon. So that is an increased risk, in my opinion, and that's where hospitals and any other prohibited area, when they can control their employees, they need to consider that if they want to try and have them store the vehicles. Strongly suggest that they store, I don't mean the vehicles, store the firearms in the trunk. Look at the increased risk that they may be starting right there.
Okay, I'm not quite sure if I quite follow this, and I'm trying to compare it with what one of my other guests said earlier. If you have a concealed carry permit and you're getting out of your car to go to a place where you're not allowed to bring in a weapon, you have to unload the weapon before storing it in your car? Or can you store it loaded if you have a concealed carry permit?
The weapon can be stored in your car, loaded, inside the passenger compartment, in a locked container, or in a container that is in a locked vehicle, as long as that container is out of sight. A container is further defined. A glove box or a console does qualify as a container, and that's written specifically into the law. If it's a prohibited place specifically, such as the hospitals, the way the law is written, it is prohibited in the parking lot.
So even in the parking lot, you would have to park across the street in order to be able to store a loaded loaded gun.
No. They put a safe harbor, a parking lot safe harbor annotation in the law, allowing a concealed carry permit holder to bring the weapon onto the parking lot inside the vehicle and lock it up inside the vehicle. And then they went further to write that if they wanted to store it in the trunk, they would be allowed to carry that weapon in the parking lot, even though it is prohibited in the parking lot, as long as it is unlocked and only from their door to their trunk.
Okay. So in this case, you can still keep a loaded weapon in your vehicle in a hospital parking lot if you have a concealed carry permit.
That is correct.
Okay. I'm wondering about situations that happen where, you know, especially in the emergency room where people come into the hospital in a hurry, it may be the victim, the injured party, and it may not be someone who would be in the predictable situation of, say, having been injured with a gun. It might have been someone who just had a heart attack or was in an auto accident who comes into the ER and they have a concealed weapon.
Sure. And that is an area of concern that needs to be addressed and that we do talk with hospitals about. In particular, if they were to come across a firearm in those situations, there is also a FOID law in Illinois which requires you to have a firearms identification card in order to handle a firearm.
Yes.
So the nurse or whoever is with the patient would need to possess a FOID themselves in order to disarm that patient.
You mean just to be able to touch the gun?
In order to hold that gun, correct.
So does this mean that our hospitals essentially having to make sure they have a person with a FOID card on the premises at all times?
That is my suggestion, that they need to plan for that in their security plan. They need to know that there may be an occasion that they run across a firearm, and they need to be able to handle that firearm within the law.
They don't have to own a gun themselves, but they have to be adequately trained to be able to handle one.
That is absolutely correct.
Are there questions about building design or the way the building is laid out that come to mind when you're looking at issues like this?
Not specifically toward concealed carry. I don't believe that concealed carry changes the physical security of a hospital or any other facility. As John mentioned, you know, there's millions of permit holders, and the violence has not increased. That is not something that we anticipate.
Mm-hmm. In the case of schools or another situation where definitely there are no concealed carry weapons allowed, are any of them talking to your firm asking questions about this law?
Again, with that being the lead, no. As far as continuing with security vulnerability assessments, absolutely, and that is an integral part of any assessment, but it's not. I haven't had any specific how do we address the concealed carry, no.
Do you have any clients then that have leeway, that have to make that decision, do I allow weapons in my place of business or my house of worship
sure.
or not?
The house of worship in particular are facilities that need to make a decision. And I think that every business and citizen needs to understand the law in order to make an educated and informed decision on how they want to handle that. Houses of worship have the opportunity, as does any other facility that is not expressly on the prohibited list, to prohibit firearms. I know one of your callers asked about the banks. In that situation, they decided they didn't want to have concealed carry firearms in their facility, so they were allowed to post the signs, and that is what is required. So they have to make that decision consciously how they want to handle it. Houses of worship, I have seen one church in central Illinois with a written notice that says something to the effect as they're a sanctuary, and we have an expectation of peace. You have the right to bear arms, but we suggest you don't bring them here.
So they're not saying absolutely no, but they're making a request.
In this one particular instance, yes. They would rather not have them there. However, they don't want to take the stance and put the signs up and prohibit them. That's kind of a unique situation.
Do you have any particular guidelines that you give to clients on what things to consider in making a decision like that?
For concealed, whether or not to allow concealed carry?
Yes.
Honestly, no. That's a really good idea. You gave me a good idea to work on. No, I do not.
And I'm wondering, Being based in Bourbonnais, are you dealing just with Illinois clients, or do you have clients in other states?
No, we have clients throughout the country.
And so, of course, Illinois is new, but 49 other states are already dealing with this. It sounds like it just doesn't come up much.
It really doesn't. The things, you know, when it would come up is when the law goes into effect. And with Illinois, you know, one thing we have to stress with the hospitals, it would be a liability to consider. And by that means, you know, an instant thought is, oh, my gosh, we're going to have to go put in magnetometers and fluoroscopes, metal detectors and x-ray machines. No, that's not necessarily the case, but in order to impose a liability on the property owner, if a concealed carry license holder were to commit an act of violence, you'd have to establish that the property owner could have reasonably foreseen the criminal act. What that boils down to is, let's deal with our employee, let's put up the signs, and that will deal with the public. They have to address the employee situation and make sure that they have adequate policies in place prohibiting them in the workplace, in the hospital, as well as rules and policies for reporting that someone does have something.
Well, I'm sorry we're running out of time, but obviously this is an area where there's a lot of questions that are still be coming at us, especially here in Illinois, where concealed carry is a new law. Tim Sutton of Sorensen Wilder and Associates, thank you very much for coming on the program today.
Well, thank you, Jim. I appreciate the time.
And thanks to my guests earlier in the show, concealed carry firearms instructor John Bach and Champaign County Sheriff Dan Walsh. Thanks to everyone who called or emailed questions. Our apologies for anyone who didn't make it to the air. This is Focus on WILL.